you just started working at Salesforce. Do you want to tell me a little bit about like what made you move, what interested you in the move, and those kind of things?
I wanted to challenge myself a bit more in to find something like to actually do something more interesting for me. And well, I have a lot of things going around this. I wouldn't go in deep into it, but it's also a matter of the chance and like opportunity. And so I get approached in. And also Salesforce is very well known for the move for AI and CRM and things like that. So I say, like, yep, why not? Just give it a try. And
What are the things that interested you, if you mind going into details in your new role?
So the first time I got to enter Salesforce, I look at the mascot, that's the icon, and I like, it got just got me. It's so cute. It just got me. So that's the more interesting. But actually, I'm in the new role, have a lot of things to learn. And it's completely, how to say it, in a way, it's very similar to Microsoft. And but
Yeah, I can
in,
imagine.
they're more focused on CRM. So I got a lot of things to learn, a lot of new friends, a way to work, and also because I started at the at leading engineer, so have a lot of you need to get a lot of contacts and being in the level of leading in staff level. So I cannot wait for people to actually go and hold my hand. So I need to be more proactive. So
Yeah.
yeah, in a way, it's make you feel more energetic. Like,
Oh, I
okay,
can
right.
imagine.
Yeah, you can learn. You have to learn, and you want to learn.
But I also feel like sometimes this like change in scenery, if you want to call it like that, is energetic at itself. Because if you are with a company, you get for a long time, you get into like this mode of like business as usual to some extent. Whereas like if you put yourself out there, be like, okay, let's look how other companies are doing things. I always felt like this boost in energy at any given time. One thing I'm particularly curious about with your background, because I think the first time we met, you were still with Cloudinary, and I hope this is
Cloudinary
correct.
and yeah, Cloudinary.
So you kind of like seen the entire spectrum of like companies from like
Right.
Cloudinary. I would put more on like the startup side. Whereas like Microsoft, you hardly will find anything bigger. And Salesforce, probably more in the Microsoft direction, but not that level of scale. So like, yeah, you have a little bit of everything. What are some things that are like some difference that you notice, for instance, working between those two on that spectrum? What are things that you think companies could benefit from? Like basically, like if you could, well, I think what I'm interested in, what I really want to know, if like if you could pick characteristics from all those companies, what would you like to have in a company that you are interested in working at?
Well, you know what? That's a very interesting question. Very good question, to be honest. I started my career with working in startup, like very tall, small startup, and then I moved to bigger startup like Cloudinary, which already actually is more like a unicorn. It's still startup, but it's already
It's,
profitable.
yeah.
So I like the way Cloudinary working. Like it's very startup. But it's also have a bit of sense because they have a bit of sense of stable company. Like right now it's become, I think it's bigger, but when I was there last time, it was, I think we have about 100, 200, I don't remember exactly, but it's more like a family and everyone know everyone and you actually know who's to reach out and basically the scope is much smaller, people more close to each other. We used to have like gathering where everyone flying in together into one place and have some fun day, like 1 or 2 days together and exploring, learning about. And you really feel like you're part of the company and you feel like you part of decision making, like try to guess what the next innovative stuff that we head into in order to make us lead in the domain. So that's what I really like. And they really gave me a lot of opportunity to grow. I wouldn't be where I am right now if I didn't join Cloudinary and they give me the chance to explore new things. Like speaking, for example, being a speaker. I mean, I always wanted to do it, but when I was in Cloudinary, actually they gave me the opportunity to stand in front of the crowd and talk. And that's start everything. So that's part about Cloudinary and Microsoft. In the other hand, like I think 10 times, 20 times bigger, or maybe even
easily.
I don't remember. Well, it's huge.
Yeah.
So I moved from Cloudinary to Microsoft, and I remember the first time I get into it, I wasn't so ready for that because it was right after Corona, still Corona a bit, and after the pandemic. And the onboarding was like, I got there, everyone at home, and got to the office, and I don't get the HR welcome, anything. So it's a bit weird, like you have everything virtually, and you don't really like have everyone say, hey, welcome here, and then you have got all the swag and the stuff. I literally a bit along. So, and then it's also like the shock, you know, it's the shock for moving from DAO where everything is small and everyone know everyone to a big scope where it's like everyone in the same company, but everyone in its own group. So the nice thing is about Microsoft is that they changed the way they work. So it's still corporate, but every group works as like a startup, like a mini startup inside. But then it makes things much harder to reach out because you literally don't know who to contact. And I was a bit shocked. I mean, I got used to Slack and then moved to Teams, and Teams is not the same like Slack on any scale.
Now that you're not at Microsoft anymore, I can say Teams is the worst.
Cut it out. I mean, you need to cut it apart, otherwise they will give you bad publicity.
I'll cut it out, but it's still the worst.
Nah, don't worry. Yeah, so Microsoft, actually, when I went from Cloudinary to Microsoft, that's part I understand that being a senior in a startup and being the senior in a corporate, that's two different things, like really two different things. That's a huge shock.
I have an idea where you're going with this, but can you elaborate?
Basically, I was a front end, so a senior front end. And then when I moved to Microsoft, I got a title of senior software engineer. Mm-hmm. So it's more like a more broader scope. In staff, at some point, you were like senior, but senior because you have a lot of years, or maybe you're very good in the job and you know how your domain, like how to work with your domain here is the front end very well. But in corporate, with being senior doesn't mean that you know how to code well, or you know how to finish your sprint, how to lead the features. Like, that's not it. That's not just it. It's like you suddenly jump from, I don't know, somewhere to senior, and you say like, okay, now what?
I think at a big corporate like that, you don't need to know everything, so you can like specialize a lot more on certain things. And also, knowledge gaps, you can very easily hide those in big corporate.
No.
You can just ask someone else to do it, basically. Whereas at a startup, you kind of need to know everything from like, this is how we gather requirements, this is how we start the sprint, this is how we track the issues, this is how we deploy, this is how we monitor, etc., etc. In the startup, this is done by one person, whereas in Microsoft, you have like 15 departments, not particular Microsoft, but like corporate, you have like 15 different departments doing those things. So that's the thing where I'm like, every time when I was involved with like corporate like that, I got somewhat frustrated because I was like, do I really now need to submit a ticket to get access to this log here? Can I not just have a look?
No, but actually, you know what? In the other hand, that in Microsoft, that the kind of things, it was reduced to the minimum. Like you at some group, because I went to the group that we just started to build a new product. So it's kind of like a startup. So we kind of like do everything ourselves. in a way. But like in this, in my story, that's kind of opposite, because Cloudinary, we don't really need to do everything, because at the point we were in Cloudinary, everything, everyone already, like, we have a DevOps, we have automation, we have things like this. So when I moved to Microsoft, the teams, I actually the whole opposite. Like, now I need to know, now I need to go and set up the automation, and now I need to understand how I'm going to do on-call. And the on-call is like, the UI is not that great. So you look at the ticket and you're like, what I'm going to do with it? What do you want me to do with it? The problem is that the scope is very wide. Like, the company is so wide. So we are the group, and then we need someone, instead of going, let's say, the department, we need someone from the back end to help us with something. Here, it's like, we need someone from the Azure team to help us with something. But who in the Azure team, we don't know. it's not that easy to look for. And from front end, senior front end, to be a software engineer front end, they actually require you to be more involved in, like, to define your own scope, and that's something I wasn't used to it. I'm going there, and the first week I was in Microsoft in there, and I got an email say, "Hey, you just got to be the accessibility champion of the whole group," and I'm like, "What?" that's in one hand, that's awesome. In the other hand, Right after I got an email, then someone scheduled for me a meeting to do the demo of the product that I barely know about 2 days. I still don't know how the product works. So I got in there like, what I'm supposed to do is?
So one thing that I would like to circle back a little bit to, you mentioned before that Cloudinary was kind of like a family at that point when you were there. I would make the statement that if a company puts out like a family culture or something in an open position, that would be a massive red flag for me.
Why?
I like if there's like a very friendly work atmosphere and stuff, but I like to separate work and my personal life very much. Like for instance, now at JetBrains, if I'm in Amsterdam, for instance, I always reach out to my colleagues there. How about we grab a beer or something after work? Like, I like that atmosphere. But if a company says, oh, we're like a family here, this immediately swings with like unpaid overtime. That immediately swings with like, oh, there's a public holiday. Well, but family sticks together. And this might be like originally in Germany, this was like such a big thing when I got into the career. And it just leaves such a bitter aftertaste for me now that I'm like immediately like...
I got where you're coming from. Yeah, I mean, the core idea of family cultures in many places are considered red flag, really. I totally understand that. What I meant about Cloudinary being like a family is more because here in our in Israel, we actually kind of like family, meaning everyone help everyone being like a friends and like help out and treat each other like friends and go in and have barbecue at each other's house and stuff like that. Like, pretty close. It's the kind of family like that, but not the kind of family like, oh, hey, we need to stick together and we need to work together of some sort. So that's a different kind of family. Like, it's not, they're not going to tell you that you need to be available like 24 hours or something because we're family.
Yeah. Speaking of family, that's another thing that I would love to talk to you because we briefly touched on that before I hit the record button for this. But you have 4 kids, which I'm already deeply impressed by just by the fact of having and managing 4 kids and still keeping sanity in general. But you also like are now lead engineer at Salesforce. So do you think that the skills you gained as a mother, at least for me, once I became a dad, I immediately like had to learn skills that I didn't even know I wanted to learn. Do you think that some of those skills benefited you in your job?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely. Like, once you become a parent, you have to learn the skill of teaching, because, you know, like mentor, not mentoring, like teaching, really teaching your kids. And of course, managing kids, like you have small kids and sometimes they will try to test your boundary and you need to set a guideline for them, right? And then you learn how to say no. And then I learn how to deal with them, like jumping and screaming at you and saying, no, I want this, and start crying about that. And so that's one of the skills you have to learn. And then you go to work and then you also realize that there are people that the same thing. it's like managing small kids. I mean, not really small, but sometimes you have to think a way that people are different. So before I have kids, like, I have very high standard for myself. I need to, the code they write in have to be at the same level like I wrote. Like basically, you know, any developer thinking, yeah, like I'm writing my code the best. And then of course, at some point, you realize that that's the same thing. Somewhere in your own world, someone is looking at your code and saying, who wrote this? Terrible code or something like that. But that's one of the things I learned, that everyone is different and all my kids are different. They cannot use the same thing. Like if you write a program with all the rules, the program will respect it. Though AIs tend to not respect it. But if you use the same, write the same rule, you cannot program your kids to obey that. So instead, you need to train them. You need to mentor them, like to show them how to do this. And so there was one time when my oldest daughter, she didn't know how to clean the room and she like make a mess.
I still don't.
Yeah. And I wasn't happy so much. And then I thought to myself, okay, but then I never really teach her to clean it proper. So I have to stop and show her the way and then bring it to work. As you know, sometimes junior doesn't know how to do it. And when you start a new employee, so we used to have some employees that came to our team that they don't know what is Git, because they didn't work with Git before, and they don't know how to resolve conflict, and they got stuck, and they just like cry about it and say they cannot proceed, and why you push this, that making my whole branding mess up because I have a lot of conflict, I don't know where to go from there, I don't know how to do code review, stuff like that. So in the beginning, I would get pissed because like, why didn't you know Git? It's like standard, right? Why don't you know CSS? Why don't you know a meta query and stuff like that? And then I think it's like my kids, they didn't know because they never experienced that. So why not just, so maybe I shouldn't stop and hold their hand and teach them. So this is one of the things. And then four kids for different individuals that really need your attention. So how are you going to do that? So I mean, managing, like giving attention for each of them is like giving one-on-one meeting for every thing. I'm not a people management level. Luckily, I'm not a people management track. I wouldn't go for that. It's just terrible. But I cannot handle the whole people with management like that. But what they say, you have a project. I have a project that involves several people, and it's like several kids, like my kids. I want them to do one project together, and they all want different things. Someone's like, why do I do this? And the other one, I lie in the chair and do nothing. It's not fair. Oh, that's dumb. It's not fair. You have one kid until now, so until your younger one start to run and start to requesting or receive things, and you will hear that term. It's not fair.
Yeah.
Why it's not fair? So why he got the toys? Why you bought for him the toy? You don't buy for me. And why do he got to watch him move TV and I don't get to watch the TV? Stuff like that. So pay treatment. Think about how you divide the work equally. And a lot of like politics guy going on.
I'm not good at those things.
But the greatest, I think, the greatest skill I learned from them is patience. Very. I used to be not patient enough to teach anyone. But after I have like my kids, I start to be really need to hold your breath, slow down, and then talk like more acceptable.
I definitely feel the patience thing. I'm still not very patient, but like more patient than before. The other thing that was more surprising to me is how important time management was. Because like before kids, okay, if you're not quite ready with your thing and you just work an hour late,
it was
a very natural thing for me. Well, now you have like a very dedicated timeline. Like, okay, I need to pick up the kid from daycare, or in our case, the nanny needs to go. So someone needs to be there to take over the kid at that time.
Prioritization. Yes. Yep. That's a skill.
So that was definitely very helpful for me. To be like, okay, yeah, you have to do things at a certain time. And this also means, that was another thing for me, work is not as important at any given time as people might seem or like to make it seem.
Yeah.
Things very rarely catch fire if they're not done at that very moment. They can usually wait till the next day.
If it's D0, it's somewhat on fire, but it's not likely to hurt. Just a normal one. I mean, if you reply late for 5 minutes, it can hold.
Yeah. This might not go if you work in like a hospital or something like.
No, that's definitely not.
But if you work for like corporate 500, the things can usually wait a little bit.
So how do you deal with, how you do deal with the prioritization part? Like,
so really, I'm not in the very lucky situation, I think, that I have a very nice 9-to-5 job. That's one of the benefits as developer advocate. You're not as involved with like actual product deliveries.
Mm.
So yes, I might have to create a blog post or a video or something to a certain day, but it's not like things catch fire if they're not ready. So that was like a really nice thing. And also now at JetBrains, I have the flexibility that I basically have any flexibility. So when the kid is sick, for instance, or the nanny needs to go earlier and I take over, then I can either work a couple hours at night or work on the weekend and catch up on those things. So I like having that flexibility. And this way, it makes the prioritization for me very easy. The only thing that I'm very clear about is like, the nanny leaves at 4 p.m., I'm off work at 4 p.m. Because the having the kids stick with a certain schedule was like so eye-opening for us of like how much better sleep is when they go to bed at the same time every day. So those are things that are very important to me and help me a lot be like, okay, 9-to-5 is a really nice thing. I like my work. Everyone that asks me, I love what I'm doing. I'm extremely passionate about what I do. But I'm also very happy at 4 p.m. to go through that door and be out here.
Right. You also keep your home's office separate, right?
And yes.
Yeah. I found that it's very helpful for like, okay, I leave this room, I'm out.
So. Yes. And that's also one of the things that makes things easier for our kids, where they know, okay, if mama and papa are in those rooms, they're working. It's a little bit different now because my wife has like a glass door, so it's like she can see them, and it's a little different. But for I think my daughter was like 2 or 3 times in this room.
Right.
So she very much knows if Papa is upstairs, he's working.
Yeah, same to my kids. Yeah, the first 3 times they didn't know, but then now they know that if I'm going to my office, which means I'm literally in my office. They don't disturb me unless they have, like, they really need me for something. But yeah.
And that's honestly one of the things that I love so much, because I can still easily go downstairs. And in our case, when the nanny's home with the kids, I can just hang out with or I make coffee. I will play with the toddler for a little bit. It's the best.
And you got to walk to the kitchen, make a coffee. So it's count on the steps.
Yeah.
I also did almost the same thing. So, initially, when I have 1 or 2 kids, I didn't really have much different on my calendar. But now that I have to always put it in my calendar on the block times. Where here I would not get any meeting at all. And so everyone that tried to get a meeting, I'm using Slack again. So that's just
obviously, yeah, I could have thought about that.
I like, oh my God, that's a breeze. And then I start missing Teams. You wouldn't think that you'll miss Teams until you actually left for another thing.
I can see that.
I miss Teams because it had the function of on the meeting was a channel. So
that is a nice thing. That's true.
That's a nice thing. In Slack, you kind of like, okay, I need to save the link that we talked on Google Meet, otherwise I lose it for it.
You have in the handle or what they call it now, you have that, but
that's huddle, so
right, yeah, it's
yeah, and it's not looking that well, so it's like sometimes it doesn't detect your voice. Anyway, go back to the calendar thing. So I kind of block it, and I'll also make put on my status on Slack so everyone knows that I'm out for the day. Yeah. And you have to prioritize, because otherwise, yes. very hard.
One thing now I'm curious, how do you handle to keep up to date with everything happening in the front-end world? And I'm asking particularly because before when I was doing consulting, I was usually like reading blog posts and those kind of things outside of work hours, which is now difficult when like there's a toddler jumping on you left and right.
Yeah, I know.
I'm now in the lucky situation as developer advocate, staying up to date is kind of part of my job. So I can do those things just as like my daily routine. But how do you handle this?
It's not easy. It's not.
Yes.
I still don't know how I do it.
It just happened to happen.
I didn't really put a lot of effort into saying I have to go and update. I have to do this. I have to do that. I mean, usually I put in my backlog things I want to learn or things I saw interest in tech. And by the time I have my eyes look into it, it's already like not a trend anymore.
No,
I was just joking. It's not really that good that way. But I when I put it on my backlog, so I have notions. So whenever I have something I want to learn, I keep a calendar and I put everything I wrote a to-do as I learn about this framework, learn about MCP, stuff like that. And then I put in the backlog, and then every week in the beginning of the week, I look at my backlog and I say, maybe this week I want to learn one thing. And I dedicate several hours to learn it and play with it. And it's also, I try to connect to my work in a way, because also part of my work is I try to help the team grow faster.
Right.
So part of the things that you need to always learn, look for a new place that you can improve, a new tool that you can improve. So that's giving me the opportunity that I should learn or dedicate some time to learn about let's say AI, if that's the focus of the company. So Thursday is usually the day that I will block most of the day to do study and to organize stuff. And I'm actually lucky because that's also one of the things I decided to move, because my new company in Salesforce, my team, they also encourage to do a speaking outside.
Nice.
Yeah. So ISA, and then also encourage things for writing and sharing knowledge. So it's given me a lot of freedom to decide that I want to learn about this and I want to write about it. So, and my manager is very supportive for that. So, yeah.
I think this is super underrated to if you're in the content creation scene, to just put yourself out and be like, okay, I want to learn about this, but if I just learn about it, then I don't use it actively. So what I like to do is saying, just I have one backlog ticket, I want to write a blog post about MCP to force myself to learn it and then actually apply it to some extent.
Yeah,
I think this is something that works for me way better. I've done the same with conference talk, where I'm like, I think this could be interesting to people, and I've known jack shit about it, so let's learn it. And once it gets accepted, then I can actually allocate time meaningful as well.
Yeah, that's usually also the case for me when I try to get a new talk idea. I try to connect it with work or to look at how I solve a problem at work with the technologies. And then I And then I can come up with a much more relevant talk to the audience. And but yeah, it's not as straightforward. I think it also depends a lot about how much support you have from managers.
For sure. For sure. On that, I know a lot of companies, particularly like in the consulting area, do like dedicated trainings where they hire like an expert and you sit 3 days in a room to learn about fancy Node.js framework of the week. I don't know. How do you feel about those?
About learning, we don't have a learning like 3 days in a row like that, but we do have some, we do have some tech talk and like a sharing experience and tech talk once a month. We are actually in my team, we just started a TED talk. I wasn't there before. So when I came, I proposed to my managers also, me and my colleagues proposed to my managers to do a TED talk to help sharing knowledge and sharing new technology with the team and keep the team up to date. Because once you work in company like corporate, you actually go in too deep inside the company technologies, and maybe there's a disconnection between the company technologies and the actually modern trend. So we wanted to keep update, want to know about the new team and see what's going on. So we started with TikTok once a month for about 1 hour, and we also have some internal training. Also Microsoft, we also have the course. Yeah, and we have something called tech trend, which is internal Microsoft doing training for internal Microsoft employee, but it's like usually take about 3 months course to learn. So let's say advanced React or something that the Python 101 and stuff like that for people to learn.
Wow.
So what do I feel about it? I mean, I like it in a way that you can share, you can learn about something new. But in the other end, it's not clear that how you want to, if you're not using it, you learn and you just can't forget it.
I think I like this like 3 month approach where you can actually like build something meaningful.
Yeah.
The ones that I did that are like 2-3 days, there you're...
The workshop.
Yeah, there you're just doing like extensive hello worlds and you're like, not really able to apply them afterwards, unless you're like right in the lucky situation that you have exactly that kind of project lined up. I've done like a project management training. I've never do anything with project management. So it was such a waste of time. I have a fancy certificate, which like German companies are like super happy about. I'm like, I have no idea about this stuff.
Well, it's project management. You are doing leverage, so you can content creation is project, your project, right? So you kind of manage the project. So it's kind of related in a way. But I get that. I mean, for bootcamp or for like 3 days workshop, or a day workshop, is for me, it provides very few, very minimal benefits for me, because it's like, it's not long enough for you to learn anything or remember anything. Most of the time, you're rushing towards what the instructor is doing. And then in the end, you just like pull whatever you're pulling or not paying attention too much. And you don't really get this.
I think the only valuable part is that you've like, okay, you heard about a concept. And then if you really need it, you might remember, oh, this is what I can apply here. Maybe let me look this up. But on that, I personally, that's exactly why I like going to conferences. That's where I like pick up on technical concepts, technical ideas, and then later on be like, wait a minute, that person said something very interesting that was somewhat related. Maybe I can find this talk online and watch it again. And then you're like in that moment where you can apply it.
Yeah, that definitely the case. So like also that's going to conference is one of the things that very, very valuable to help you update it to tech. So I kind of like any job that I wanted to get is always have to give me the time where I go and do the talk, because that doing the talk is one thing, sharing back to the community. In the other hand, that's the only time when I actually can go and connect to people and see what the new in the market is, anything that I can learn from them and bring it back. So.
Is there any trend that you see, particularly now you as a team lead where you need to be more on top of trends and stuff, that for like front-end development that you think is particularly interesting, that excites you in a way?
I think more about the lately everything's involved of more about AI. So we kind of we kind of neglected the JavaScript domain where people don't fight about the JavaScript framework every week anymore. And you know, we used to say that every day, every hour, there's a JavaScript framework come out. And now it's like the opposite. Like every few hours, you have a new MCP or AI framework come out, right?
That's true.
So, for front end, I would say I really want to see what the trend of the performance. So I, because of all these AI changes, and now people will start, they have to develop something that can work with AI, can work with the server with AI, it would take a quite long time to process stuff. So for front end, I would expect to see we focus more about improving the performance, the running time, the experience for the user, not focusing about the layout or the way we build the component that much, because we have Copilot for that, and the code is pretty shitty. but it's acceptable. And it look okay. You need to do some tweak there to make it your standard, but still, it's not. You don't really need to care about what framework it's like underneath, but more like you have more freedom about how I'm going to put on, let's say, JavaScript AI in browser in my client side, and how I'm going to make it optimized enough so that it would not block my application and make it short, something like that. If you ask me, don't ask me about React, okay?
I wasn't intending to.
Okay.
My question, what I'm curious based on what you just said, do you think we will see a decrease in code quality over the next few years?
Actually, you know what? It will decrease. Yeah, because people will start getting lazier. Just let's say I start getting lazy already. Don't say that. Maybe we need to edit it. but yeah, I'm the person kind of always like, if I need to write it because I don't trust the AI to roll it for me. Mm-hmm. But slowly, I let a Copilot to write part of my code. And just the other day, I asked it to write some component for me, the whole component, and restructure my applications. And just do, I'll just sit there and like, you know, agentic mode thing. Mm-hmm. And I will just sit there and wait and look at how it does it and just see that it's doing correctly and then review it afterwards. So it does kind of funny because it took the component it wrote and then it converted from JavaScript to TypeScript. And then it adds a bunch of things that are not related inside the TypeScript form. I don't know why. It's still working, but the code like this for a very small component. And at some point, I read it, and I'm supposed to do code review and fix it. But I'm like, it be working. Never mind, just go for it. So I kind of expect that the trend for the code quality will go high like this, but the productivity will be high because now you can shift faster. And then at some point it will go up again. Like the code quality will go up again because people will start spending the time on fixing it, on aligning and training the AI to be better and generating code.
Yeah, I've talked about this on this podcast before as well. I think there will be an increase in productivity, also making software development more approachable as an industry, but also bringing the production cost of software dramatically down.
Right.
Which is beneficial for companies. At the end of the day, it also means that very likely our salaries will go down or at least level out a little bit more. Because I can share from my experience, like I have friends that are like in bank industry and like finance and stuff. And like if you're not working for like a private investment company, then you have like, particularly in Germany, like a very solid income, but not like extraordinary. Whereas like software was always like paid very, very well. I think that will level out. I still think engineers are going to be paid well, but like if I see like uh, I've I it was like, now it's like a couple, at this point, years actually, where like at NVIDIA, like a developer advocate for machine learning or AI, 900,000 salary, where you're just like, where are those numbers coming from? Like, what are we even talking about here? Like, this Silicon Valley salary will go down a lot, I think. Which I think is not a bad move. I think having like a more standardized income level across the industry would be a good thing.
Well, you know, we live in a very good period of tech, high tech before. Yes. I mean, at least until pandemic. And in the pandemic, we saw the huge spike going up, everyone hiring and being high tech is so cool and stuff. But again, we have a very good years. We have good years and we earn a lot. I remember the time when people like, you go to the staff, you can ask for any number that you want. And they will try to match it. And then it become like the corporate salary are not as good as startup. And now it's kind of like the opposite. You know, you go to the startup and they're like, I'm not going to pay you this much. You and the benefit's not as good anymore. But hey, that's the thing. It's changing in a way that the high performer, let's say the experienced engineer, will still get the salary that matching the standard. But it's not that easy for junior to join the market or to get like a ridiculous amount of money like it used to be.
Yes. So 100% agree.
It sucks for anyone who wants to be a web developer nowadays. But
I don't know. I think in general, I wouldn't be surprised if this trend of like you don't necessarily need to go to university is coming down because, again, the field itself has become more approachable. You do need to put in that time and invest in your learning in a way. Like if you're just like wipe coding along and don't understand it, then you're not going to be successful in the industry. But if you put in the time and use AI as a learning tool to like, okay, why was this generated? What is it doing? And why is it maybe not the best approach? I think then you still have similar chances. I think what's going to happen is that it sounds mean, but it's not mean, and I don't intend it to be mean. I think what's going to happen in the industry is like we're going to trim a little bit of fat. The low performer are going to be replaced by AI. I do think that. That doesn't mean that like average developers are going to be replaced.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, I saw people, with my friends also, you saw on Twitter that people are very worried about their life and so afraid of AI replacing it. I mean, I do kind of feel them. I also, at some point, when it came out, and then one of the guy in Microsoft, I think, was saying like, yeah, we don't need front end anymore. Now we can replace for it with AI. And I will literally, in one hand, I laugh at him. On the other hand, I've started to think to myself, wow, that's mean I'm become absolute, my job will be taken away. Then after a while, I come to realize that front end is not going anywhere. Just change it. Because whether you like it or not, the AI cannot build the front end because front end is still look and feel is something that human, only us know. Like it generates a page with a very nice looking button. But I am as the developer, I look at that and I say, okay, look, this button doesn't look good together. But looking good together is not something AI know because it doesn't have eyes to see it.
I definitely think that AI can facilitate much more than I originally anticipated for front-end developers. Yeah. If we're talking about like what job is going to go first, is I'm 100% convinced it's back-end development.
Okay, that's a very bold thing.
I'm not saying it's going away, but like if I look at like, okay, what can be automated, most backend technologies are like aggregating of different data sources. And there are very established patterns for that you apply. It is actually what AI is good at. So.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's like AI is very good and building architecture, backend architecture, like API and things like that.
Yeah.
So the huge change will like in that aspect. Like Swagger generations, I don't need the backend developer to do that for me anymore. Now I can just ask AI to do it for me. And the quality of it is another thing, but
yep.
Acceptable, right? It's acceptable. And then I can handle the rest. And so the change will affect the backend. I tend to agree on that. Yeah. Also, it's affected how you look at the things, like how you approach the work. I mean, I don't want to say that absolute, like you need a degree or you don't need a degree. Like it used to be that when you want to be, you turn high tech, you just need to do a boot camp of 3 months or 6 months, and then you're ready to go, and then you start to get a job offer and so on. Now it's not like that. 6 months will not land you a job. But yeah, the other way, how are you going to learn about the critical thinking? So the thing working with AI, you need to have problem solving, critical thinking, learning, like read and understanding also. So
that's exactly what I think. I think technical skills are going to matter to like a foundational level.
Yeah.
Like actually like soft skills of like, as you said, critical thinking, questioning, those kind of things, like reasoning also to some extent, like, does this even make sense? Is this what I wanted? I think are going to be much more valuable. And that's also then where we as developers can provide value to like business companies of like being able to sit in between and kind of like translate. And I think that's what's going to be interesting. But I'm happy to be wrong on all my takes today. If we switch away from AI a little bit, because that always makes me a little bit depressed. If we, and we talked about this earlier, that parenting can be very beneficial for like skills that you get and help you in the industry. Do you have hobbies that you do in your free time? I know it's difficult as a parent. I struggled with that myself. But do you have hobbies that benefit you in your career?
Well, benefit me in my career? I don't know. I mean, I do have hobbies of, first of all, I like to travel. That's why I kind of combine by when speaking and traveling. Like, it's the only time that I really can travel without my kids.
Yeah.
And the other end, I do. Like, free mind. No noise. And I do. Illustrated, like drawing a bit. So you can see here. So this is one of my things. So I have some artists that make this for me. This is for my drawing. This is for my one of my drawing, and then I asked it to make it into this for my 2D image into that. Yeah. So
that's cool.
The downside really that I don't have much time. The as more responsibility come, I don't have much time to sit down and draw. But it give me like inner peace, like Master Shifu inner peace, if you know what I'm saying. Which means he doesn't really have inner peace. So
yeah,
if you watch the movie, like, so I like illustrating. So I kind of teach my kid to illustrate with me. So I do something together.
That's cool.
And
that's awesome.
And having that skill, like drawing and look at things like beautiful things like that, it's helped me because I'm front end, so I need to keep my eyes sharp and eyes sharp with all the beautiful stuff. So that's helping a way. Other than that, it just you need to make a hobby of yourself learning. Like I like to learn, so I make hobby of learning as part of my routines.
I ask a question maybe a little bit provocative, because I personally think, particular now where it's like, okay, I'm working 8 hours and then the 12 hours easily I'm taking care of a little human being, and then there's also sleep part of that, so I just have a very limited time. So I personally think if you're like on such a time crunch, what you do in your hobby should be just for you, and this can be literally anything that gives you inner peace, makes you relaxed, gives you some kind of joy. And if it is not beneficial in any way, that's totally fine. So when I was growing up, I hated yard work. Absolutely couldn't stand it. Once I now it's like the most peaceful thing I can think of. Just like spending a weekend in my front yard and like best weekend I can think of. I think we had a great conversation, Maya. Thank you so much for joining me. Are there any last words that you would... I don't know how old are your kids, but if you look 10 years back, I don't know how old your kids are, but the time before you had your first kid, is there anything that you would tell yourself, like, I don't know, give yourself some grace, don't worry, it will be fine. So I'm particularly asking if there's like a mother, potential mother, soon to be mother listening, what would you advise them, her?
I have a lot to say, babe. I was raised like almost like a single kid because my brother, my sister were like 11 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
When I grew up, they completely were not there. And initially I thought one kid will be great. And then initially I thought maybe no kid because I'm not ready for that. And it took me a while to get over it. And I'm not ready. But then after I had my first kid, and I realized that it's not that scary. And, you know, we never be ready. So we'll go with the flow. So the first thing I would tell myself or tell anyone, like especially a female that thinking having kids can stop the career or having kids not ready for kids, I would just say, don't ever think about that because it's not going to happen. And you never know. Just jump right at it. If I have to say something to my true self, I would say I would rather have kids that early age finish with that. And then I have more freedom to do other things. So right now, at my point, like it's 40 and I just have my fourth kid, the fourth baby. And it's really hard because physically, mentally, you're already old at generation old. Okay, so I don't like to see the word old, but basically,
I didn't say it.
It's right. You didn't say it. I say it, so it's not on you. It's me. I can say that. No one can say that to me. but yeah, when you watch 20, it's much easier. And let's say we have four kids. If I do it earlier, then by now my kids are already grown up and they can take care of themselves, and I can have more time focus on my career. If I have now, I have to struggle between me and my career and stuff like that. I also start my career pretty late, so that's what I'm advice. And actually, don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of being a parent. It's the matter of like
it's less scary than
with the
I
flow.
Thought.
Yeah, it's not scary that it's like, anyway, you screw up anyway, so don't worry about it. And you will cry at some point. Like I will cry at some point because my kid didn't listen to me and they make me feel bad. But that's life. It's fine. I'm going through it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and one more thing. Last time when I was in a Google conference and I met my friends who are also a female, and she actually asked me a very interesting question. So she asked me that because I'm a woman and I gave birth, did I ever feel like giving birth stopped me from advancing? This is not common, you know. Like people always say that if you're having kids, like especially women that giving birth, and you have 9 months of carrying the baby. Oh. So it affects your performance. And also people don't want to advance you because you are going to maternity leave soon. Luckily, we live in a European kind of standard, so we don't have to worry about the after giving birth. But it's certain weeks that you have to be with the baby. So like at least the first 14 weeks or 26 weeks or so on. And so you cannot really do anything. You leave works and you come back. So you feel like people maybe that you will miss your chance to advance the career because you'll be away from work. So so she asked me that question and I told her the truth is I don't know how it feels because every time when I gave birth, I actually make a jump in my career.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, like it's like the only time that I can really stop for my works and review my career and see whether I wanted to go further, where do I want to go, if I'm happy where I am right now.
So I think there is a weird stigma in general, even in our industry, about like paternity and maternity leave, which I, to some circumstance, just consider a necessity. Yes, I think so. I was off work 3 months. My wife was also off work 3 months. The company will still be around after 3 months. Yes, you didn't learn about the latest JavaScript trends in those 3 months, very likely. I watched a lot of basketball, luckily, because I was right the time this time. That's just how it is. It's not a time frame where I would personally feel like, oh, I'm falling behind so much. So I personally would recommend everyone to use that time and disconnect from work as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because that time is nice with a newborn. It's stressful. But honestly, like the time with a newborn is really nice because they're just laying around like a sack of potato and they're not doing a whole lot. So as long as you're feeding and keeping them alive, it's not like...
Keeping them alive, that's hard.
That's true.
It's a period that you really need. It's like a truly period where you don't have anything to do with work. No one wants to bother you at work. Okay, take a vacation, fine. The people will just jump in, message you here and there. But maternity leave is like this the holy period where no one allowed to attach you. So, and then also. The couple's most likely nothing changed after 3 months, even after 6 months, because our development cycle take a very long time. So,
and to some extent, that's also just an expectation that you need to manage. For instance, like next week, we have a pediatrician appointment. It is at the same time I have a meeting that is already scheduled. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, I have a pediatrician. Well, not I have a pediatrician appointment, but I have to take my kid to the pediatrician, so
Right. It's
not going to happen. The meeting cannot be that important, that things like that cannot wait.
Yep, yeah, family first. It's after all, the company, I don't know what happened to the company. My family's with me.
Company will still be around, that'll be fine. I said it before, Maya, thank you so much for joining me. I love the perspective that you provide and the insight, so... Really, thank you so much. And I hope we see each other at a conference. It's been a while. It's been a year, close to a year now. So,
yeah, a very long time.
Thank you so much. And see you next time.
Thank you very much for having me. See you.